This is Fresh Air. Elvis Costello used to have the image as the angry young man of rock. In the late 70s, he was at the forefront of rock's new wave. Since then, he's become one of rock's most respected songwriters, and he's written in just about every pop genre. His new record takes a surprising turn. It's a collaboration with a string ensemble, the Brodsky Quartet. They're best known for their interpretations of Schubert, Beethoven, and Bartok, as well as new music. All the songs on the new album, The Juliet Letters, are written in the form of letters. This one is called For Other Eyes.
I don't know what I would do if this letter should fall into other hands than it should pass through. For other eyes.
How did you and the quartet arrive on a theme for the record and a style of working together collaboratively?
We got around the piano, they played pieces of music, and we just talked about the characteristics of music and how they appeal to us. The things about songs which you heard echoes of them in pieces of music that they couldn't possibly have influenced one another, but something about them had this intangible quality. All the sort of things that maybe you sit around talking about with people who really, really love music. And that way we sort of developed an unspoken language or an unspoken series of idioms from which we could draw and write our own compositions. And then by sheer chance, my wife happened to see this article in a newspaper, this little novelty item really about this professor in Verona who had taken it on himself to answer letters addressed to Juliet Capulet. Now, how he got hold of them, I don't know. You know, they're in the dead letter office in Verona for 6 or so years. And, you know, these people are writing to a dead imaginary woman, so... You know,
really, yeah.
You know, but people write to characters in soap operas. They don't write to the actors, they write to the characters. People write to Sherlock Holmes, you know, they write to Santa Claus, you know. They might have been serious letters. We didn't go into it, we didn't research it, but... It started as thinking about the idea of the letter form.
Let me play one of the songs that I particularly like. This is called Letter from Juliet. But first let me ask you about writing it.
The song I thought I'd write to Juliet?
Yeah.
Well, that was one that actually, curious enough, came quite early on. It sounds like one that it was almost as if we did the most difficult thing first. We did one that had lots of separate parts to it. It almost is a letter within a letter. And yet it was one that we composed and wrote the text of very early on in the scheme of things, as I recall. From the lyrical point of view, it's related very strongly to a letter that I actually received myself. I received this letter from a soldier who was in the first Gulf War, as we'll probably now have to call it. And it was a very sad letter, but I you know, saying that I'm very afraid and I don't know how I got myself into the army and here I find myself in this ditch and, you know, the only thing I've got is some records and my gas mask and pictures of people at home. And it was very pathetic, really. But nonetheless, my initial reaction maybe was not that sympathetic. And it took me to look at it a few times before I saw the human, before I saw past the title of... you know, a member of what I would think of as an army that was not necessarily fighting a noble cause. And I talked about it with the quartet and we tried to find some way of setting it in a way that we could explain the presence of this letter. So I invented a character, I suppose similar to my initial response, somebody who's very cynical. And he begins the song by describing how he's received this letter and he's mocking it, really, and telling another friend of his who he's writing to about receiving it and his sort of cynical response to it. But then he simply quotes it. And when from the time that the original soldier's letter is quoted, the music changes quite a great deal. And I think you come to realize that there is something to have sympathy with or to have pity for in the text of the letter.
It's actually a beautiful letter. Is this the letter that you received, or did you rewrite
it? It's close to it. It's close to it, and I hope the person that sent it, you know, haven't used their name or anything so that they needn't feel in any embarrassment as such.
The letter that's quoted is from a woman in the military station.
That's right, yes. That was the particularly unusual thing about it, I suppose, that it made it you know, doubly so, some, you know, particularly somebody who got in and done a career, you know, and the letter talked about joining the army to raise funds to go to college and being all the things you're taught to be very positive and self-assertive and everything, and then finding yourself in a predicament that maybe the implications of which you perhaps don't fully understand. You're a professional soldier, you don't necessarily understand the complexities and deceits of modern global politics.
Well, why don't we hear I Thought I'd Write to Juliet from Elvis Costello's new album, The Juliet Letters. This is Elvis Costello with the Brodsky Quartet.
I thought I'd write to Juliet, for she would understand. And when someone is already dead, they can no longer let you down. Instead, I find myself talking to you as my oldest friend. Tell me how I can advise someone that I don't even know to welcome death. For I received a letter that is worth reporting. And though it may raise a cynical smile, it leaves a sinking feeling, like when a soldier in a story says to the sergeant, "Have you seen my pride and joy? You know the rest, and it's no joke. Forgive me, please, as this is a letter of thanks, as I'm so bored here and I can't say where. So I'm writing to people that I may never meet. And I was thinking of something you said. I'm a female soldier, my name is Constance. I enlisted in the military, needing funds for college. I'm 23 years old, and if I do get home alive, I imagine I may think again. I'm sleeping with my eyes open for fear of attack. Your words are comfort, they're the best things that I have. Apart from family pictures and of course my gas mask, I don't know why I am writing to you.
The writer in your song who gets this letter says, "How can I tell someone I don't even know to welcome death?" Is that the reaction you had when you got this very difficult letter?
One of the immediate responses is, how can you tell somebody just not to be afraid?
This is someone you didn't even know. Someone who just knew you through your songs.
Yeah. I mean, I never did actually write back, you know. What do you say in those circumstances? I don't reply to every letter that I receive unsolicited. Sometimes it's just as well, because you're dealing with people who are obviously unhappy and have projected that unhappiness into something they've heard in what you have said or written or sung, and they are not always seeing it clearly.
Elvis Costello is my guest. He has a new album called The Juliet Letters, featuring his collaborations with the Brodsky Quartet. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Elvis Costello is my guest. Do you think that this project with songs about specific letters on specific subjects, has changed your songwriting in any way? And I'm talking about the lyrics here. You know, a lot of your lyrics have been very elliptical to many of us over the years. Do you think that that's changed at all on this record?
I should maybe explain how we actually started. You know, we made a list of letters And then one night we all went home and wrote suicide notes, which, you know, as an exercise, I mean, I hasten to add. And then everybody came in. It wasn't because we were working together or anything, you know. And we came in the next day and read them out, and it was very awkward. It was a little bit like being back in school. But once we'd done that, of course, the fear was out of that process, and people were bringing in things. Every time we met, everybody was arriving with words and music. And you should understand that though the quartet are engaged in playing music all the time, only Michael Thomas, the first violin, actually composes on a regular basis. And I don't think any of them had written words before. But I think that's the whole strength of it, is that they wrote from a very unprejudiced, unbiased way. They didn't have any crafty sort of ways of phrasing things which were typical to them. They simply sat down and tried to write letters.
So the lyrics for Dear Sweet Filthy World come from the suicide notes that you'd written when you started working together?
Yes. Yes, I mean, it was one of the first things. I mean, we may have amended them slightly, you know, as we went along. But, we got on the process of writing these things very quickly once we decided that the letter form was the way. And once we got over our natural inhibitions of showing each other barely finished or barely formed work.
Why don't we listen to the song that you've been describing that's a compilation of the suicide notes. This is Dear Sweet Filthy World.
Dear sweet filthy world, my wife, all I think that I've lived too long with all of my promises unfulfilled, but there is a veil drawn over all of that.
That these songs bring out different qualities in your voice than when you're singing rock and roll?
Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously, I'm not competing with the same amount of volume, with the same conflict of frequencies. I mean, rock and roll thrives on a collision of frequencies. The bass is doing something at variance to the left hand of the piano, and the cymbals are clashing quite literally with the electric guitars, and it's all a big exciting mess, and somewhere in the middle of that somebody's shouting their head off a lot of the time. I mean, there are quieter moments as well, of course, you know. With this, everything is very, very clear, I think, and therefore the voice can operate in a lower register without failing to project and be heard.
You didn't write or read music before this project, but you've started to learn. You never needed to read or write. I mean, after all, you're a songwriter.
Not really for the songwriting very much. When I worked in film a little bit, it became more frustrating, I suppose. And I did I co-wrote a score for a television series called GBH the year before last, and it was a very, very exciting experience. I wrote a lot of themes, and my partner wrote a lot of themes, and he did all of the orchestrations, and some of them carried on from sort of suggestions and directions that I gave. And others were completely transformed. And I thought, well, this is wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience, but I've done this now. And I think if I were to ever work in film again, I should know how to write it down so I can get my ideas exactly across. So I had already resolved to learn how to go through this barrier of feeling that I didn't need the notated form. And now, of course, I have the luxury of both.
Do you feel that the angry young rocker image is behind you, or do people still associate you with that?
It's sort of like angry old rocker now. I don't know. It depends on what, you know, in some ways it's sort of, if it's just a limitation, then I think it's kind of, in some people's minds it might still be there, and of course they will maybe say, well, you're not what you were. Well, of course, you know, that would be crazy. But I think there are some of the same. I still feel at sympathy with a lot of the things I didn't said when I started out. I don't feel like I have anything to be ashamed of, so it doesn't really bother me. It only bothers me when I feel it's becoming a trap.
And when did that start to happen? When did you start to feel it was?
Well, it doesn't become a trap in my mind. It's a trap in other people's minds, mainly. You know, mm-hmm. They won't let you escape a certain time that they have you pegged to, or a certain set of attitudes that they associate you with. And I think a piece of work like this, just shows that you needn't be like that. And what we're asking the audience to do is come along and listen, you know. And the quartet, of course, are taking an equal risk. You have to understand that. I mean, I think I'm probably taking less of a risk to sort of reputation or whatever that is, because I've never been that much concerned about that. But I suppose in a world that is so governed by critical acclaim as the classical area is, for them to be seen to be dabbling in the pop world could be damaging if people didn't realise that it was a wholehearted and passionate collaboration and it wasn't some sort of silly crossover thing thought up by a record company.
Right, I guess that would enter into a lot of people's
minds. Yeah, I think the first thing. It raises horrible spectres of hideous things from the early 70s with rock groups. And,
with the London Symphony Orchestra.
Rock groups on ice and, you know, with choirs. And equally, I have to say, I think some of the most hideous things are coming in the other direction, you know, inappropriate choices of material for divas to try and sing like Peggy Lee. I mean, I can't see the point, you know.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Elvis Costello's new album with the Brodsky Quartet is called The Juliet Letters. This is Fresh Air.